Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Are we doing this? Really?
Wait for it.
Are we doing this?
Wait for it.
Pow!
What the fuck?
WTF.
And it's also, what the fuck?
What's wrong with me? It's time for WTF.
What the fuck?
With Mark Maron.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fucking ucks? What the fuck? I'm in a car. I'm driving through Indiana. This is Mark Maron. This is WTF. You know who I am. What do I even got to go into it? Let me try to capture the feeling and the moment of what's happening right now. I'm recording this in a car. Why didn't I record it in my hotel room? I could have, but I didn't because I thought I was all set. Everything was going to be okay. I'm just going to fly from Indianapolis. Oh, I'm going to drive there first from Bloomington, which is where I was. I got two local comics in the car, Josh and Jordan. They're just going to sit here and be quiet, I guess. Look, there's corn. There's corn, you guys. That doesn't surprise you, though, does it? No, not at all. It's corn country. I'm not being condescending. It's just a reality of America. There happens to be a lot of corn around, especially in Indiana. What is on this truck? Oh, my God. How often do you see this? It's a carnival in transit. Look at that little roller coaster. I just saw a roller coaster on a truck, you guys. And this is another ride. It's the Sizzler. That's a ride. I just saw two rides on a truck, and they're more corn. This is America. I feel like I should break into the national anthem right now. What's happening? So you wonder about the road lights. Some of you really enjoyed that episode of Maron that was on last Thursday with me and Dave Anthony and Brendan Walsh, who played a comic who picked me up at the airport. That happens. These guys are driving me to the airport. I don't know why there's two of them. I guess one of them felt like he might fall asleep on the way back. Was looking out for himself. Might need someone to talk to. What was it, fellas?
Talk to?
Yeah, we're working on projects.
They're working on projects in the car. They're doing what are you doing?
Putting together, we got a web series.
Josh and Jordan have a web series. Is it on the air now?
No.
It's not on yet, so look forward to that. What's it called?
They don't have a name.
It's called Super Duper?
Yeah.
You're going to need a better name. All right, look out for that on your web. Now we're behind a bus. We had to turn the air conditioner off. Is there an accident? I'd like to do some reporting. Right now I see a downed barrel. All right, we're moving through. Today on the show, David Huntsberger, who's a comedian. He also co-hosts the podcast Professor Blastoff with Tig Notaro and Kyle Dunnigan. And I didn't really know David, and we had an amazing conversation. It was one of those episodes where I left the garage going like, holy shit, I had no idea that life existed. Completely surprising, outside of the box. It involves rodeos, it involves horses. I'm not good with horses, are you? Oh my God, look, I don't even know if I'm gonna be using this, but I'll tell you right now, if I'm using it, it's been a bad morning, okay? Let me explain to you what's happening. And I'm a little out of it. I slept like 5 hours because I did two shows last night, and I want to meet everybody that comes to the show who wants to hang out and take a picture. What is that stuff over there? Just rocks? Bricks? What is the giant white things? Where's that quarry that was in Breaking Away? Do we have time to go there?
Not if you want to make your flight.
All right, then it's not worth it. I would like to go to that quarry. Can you jump in, swim in it?
Yeah.
You can?
Yeah, of course.
Have you done that?
No.
You live here, though?
Yes.
And you know it's right there?
Yes.
All right, I understand that. You know, maybe if I would have thought about it earlier and I would say, hey, I'm in from out of town and I'd like to go swim in that quarry where that was in Breaking Away, we could have done it, right?
Yeah.
All right, so I fucked up. All right, so here's what happened. So I get up this morning. I got a 1:45 flight out of Indiana, and I didn't look at my connection to Chicago because I don't book my own travel. I agree to things, and I'm like, oh, it'll be fine. That sounds good. And now I've got less than an hour to connect in Chicago, which is a huge fucking airport, from the T-terminal, which is where these little Buddy Holly planes fly into. And then I got to run with my bag that I got to wait for on the, what do you call that thing, the jetway, to wherever my gate is, H or J. And that's a nightmare. I almost died the last time that happened. So I'm recording this in preparation to miss my flight out of Chicago to LA to record the show in my home in the garage. So you're experiencing me in pure preemptive panic mode. I think that's a fine name for what I do. You could say it's worrying about shit that you have no control over. I'm going to call it preemptive panic as if it's something helpful. I'm just fucking freaking out because I don't want to be running around the Chicago airport having missed a flight trying to figure out where to record my show. There's farmhouses. Oh, man, I could live here. I had that moment in Bloomington a couple of times. It passed very quickly, though. So what was going on? I don't want to be condescending. I have a great time in Bloomington. There's good food. I had good coffee. I think I saw John Mellencamp, but it might have been a homeless guy. But apparently that's sort of the way it goes with him. We had great shows. I really love the Comedy Attic. I'm glad everyone came out. It's been kind of a weird whirlwind Midwest thing. But anyways, thank you for watching the Marin on IFC, and I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. There's more episodes coming up. I wish I remembered, if I had it in front of me, which I probably wouldn't have had it in front of me in the garage either, I would be able to tell you the episode that's on this Thursday. How about I tell you Thursday? How about I just be general about it and say, it's a fucking great episode, because they're all great episodes. Did that sound confident? It's not like me, is it? So David Huntsberger, who you're going to hear in a minute, he grew up, I don't even want to tip it. You know, I'm just going to tell you this. I'm not a horse guy. Don't like horses. Not my thing. I don't know if it's a Jewish thing. I don't know if it's just a human thing. But I went to camp when I was a kid. I went to Brush Ranch in Pecos, New Mexico. And that was the kind of camp where my parents sent me. It was a non-Jewish thing. And I don't need to be specific, but I think it's important to be specific in these situations. There are Jewish camps where Jewish kids go with different degrees of discomfort and basic crafts and whatnot. But this was not one of those camps. This was a non-Jewish camp. It wasn't advertised that way, but it didn't cater to the delicate sensibilities of Jewish kids. So what you had to do when you went to Brush Ranch is you had to buy yourself a Stetson. These were required. These were on the list. You had to have a Stetson hat. You had to have a cowboy hat. You had to have a fly fishing rod with a fly wheel. God, I'm stuttering. And you had to have boots. You had to have cowboy boots to go to this camp. And that's because when you went to Brush Ranch, you were expected to ride horses and also to fly fish and also to shoot guns, both shotguns and 22s. So this is a secret part of my life, but I did those things. And I think I have an apology to make. I do think I have an apology to make. It just dawned on me. So I show up at Brush Ranch with my hat, and then there was a guy there who was the counselor in charge of horses. His name was Gil, and he was a little scary. He had his own horse there, and that was a female horse. And I think this is one of those times where you learned about sex. I must have been 13 or 14 years old. His female horse, Gil's, was in heat, and the horse in the stall next to Gil's wanted to fuck Gil's horse really bad. And that was the first time we saw a horse's cock. And that's something you don't forget because they're huge and there's no way to recover from that. But that's not really what I want to talk about. So I get there and you get assigned a horse. So I was assigned this horse. I think the horse's name was Mums. Now, Mums was an old horse, and I think this was anti-Semitic now that I think about it. I think it was Gil having a good time with the city boy from Albuquerque, like that even makes sense. The Jew, maybe I'm being a little martyr-y right now. Maybe it wasn't even the case. But Mum was this old, fucked-up horse that was bitter, that did not want to be ridden. And we had to learn how to saddle these horses. So you had to saddle it and pull the thing down. I don't remember. I might be able to do it in a pinch. Like, if I had to, if, like, all right, everything's on fire, there's some horses, damn, they need a saddle, I bet you it would come back to me. Whether I would have the courage to get on the horse, don't know that for sure, but I'd have to assume if I was in survival mode, I would fucking ride like the Lone Ranger. I wish I had a better reference. All right, so I got this horse, trying to figure out how to saddle this horse, and this horse reaches around and bites my fucking side. And you know what? That marked the end of my experience with horses because it was a nightmare. And I could not saddle the horse because it would always bite me. And it's paralyzing. It's a paralyzing fear right now. Right now I'm feeling it. Because let's be honest, horses are like dinosaurs. They're huge. They're bigger than me anyways. And people are always like, well, you just have to, not show fear. How is that possible? You don't think the horse can sense my 13 or 14-year-old fear after it's bitten me and made purple marks? Horses are not my thing. I rode, but I bounced. It was hard to get a gallop going. I never fell off a horse, but I was never comfortable on a horse. And I think all of you need to know that about me. So what's the amends I have to make? Well, I'll tell you. I'll tell you what that is. There was this dorky kid named Jeff. This is a sad thing, but it was pretty hilarious. All right, there was this kid named Jeff who come from Texas. You know, he comes from a, you know, rich Texas family. He thought he was a real cowboy, but he was this, you know, kid that was a little too arrogant. And, you know, look, I didn't come up with this. This was not my idea, all right? But I did go along with it, so that makes me part of the bullying process. Okay. All right, Jeff, if you're listening to this, this is a heartfelt amends. Let me see if I can frame it correctly. All right, you know how when we were at Brush Ranch and we had to load our own shotgun shells? Well, we had to do that. We had to load our own shells to shoot skeet. And, you know, we had a counselor. I'm going to call him Mike because, well, I want to protect him. But his name was Mike. So Mike would show us how to load him up. You had this machine where you'd fill it with, I think the powder went in first, and then the plastic piece, and then the buckshot. It wasn't buckshot, but it was shot. It was smaller ones, and then you sealed the top of the shell. So Jeff was really annoying. We all hated him. He was cocky and stupid, and you know, he just annoyed everybody. He was just horrible. And we loaded him a double shot of in a shotgun shell. Like, there was no pellets in it. It was just all gunpowder. So the kick was going to be pretty bad. So somehow or another, you know, we were able to get him that shell when we were shooting skeet, and we were just all waiting. We're all waiting for Jeff to shoot the double-loaded shell at the skeet and be knocked on his ass. And sure enough, Jeff goes, pull, and he took his shot and ended up on the ground. It just went boom and knocked him right over. It was hilarious for about 3 seconds until he started crying, and then we all felt bad. And I'm sorry, man. That was a shitty thing to do. You were in good form, though. You were in good form. You probably would have hit that clay pigeon hadn't it been for us laughing briefly and then feeling bad for what we did. So we're all sorry. I'm going to speak for the group of us, Jeff. We're sorry. All right? And also, I guess to close this up, just so you know this about me, I can tie a fly. It's another thing I learned at Brush Ranch. These are all very practical things for when I got to go off the grid. I can ride a horse if necessary and saddle it as long as it doesn't bite me and sense my fear. I know how to load shotgun shells and shoot skeet and miss primarily. But I think it's just the effect of having a gun is usually all you need. And also, like, if I'm pushed to the wall, I can tie a pretty effective fly and catch trout in a stocked pond if you throw food pellets around where you cast your line. So I'm ready. All right, let's talk to David Hunt.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Burger.
David Huntsberger.
That's right.
I don't really know you.
No, we don't.
But I keep seeing you around, and you know, you seem like a smart guy and a funny guy, and you do a podcast with Tig, Professor Blastoff.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't know each other.
Where the hell do you come from, man? How old are you? Are you a child?
No, I'm 34.
Really?
Yeah, I'm an adult.
How long have you been doing stand-up?
12 years.
Wow.
Well, not quite 12, almost 12.
Yeah?
Yeah, I started open mics in 2002.
Where?
I started at the Comedy Store in San Diego initially, and then moved to Austin a couple years in.
Austin, Texas.
Yep. And that's where... Then
Why'd you do that?
I don't know. I would tell people that, you know, I was working a lot in San Diego. It was way more expensive, and I didn't feel like I was getting to devote enough time to, one, the lazy life I wanted, and then more than that, to, like, focus on comedy, so.
Where were you working then?
I substitute taught, thinking, like, day one of comedy. Well, I'm going to need some free time at the drop of a hat if I get some gigs, not knowing.
I've known a couple of substitute teachers. Todd Barry used to be a substitute teacher.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh.
It was good for me because you have to develop this fake persona of, like, confidence in front of a room, which I wasn't naturally...
With children.
With children.
How old were they?
I did every single grade, so kindergarten up through 12th graders.
Really?
And, yeah, kids and drunk adults are not that dissimilar. As, you know, like there's...
I imagine drunk adults, you probably have a better shot at managing.
Maybe. There's a threshold. Like fifth graders I found to be really great. They don't have any pompous...
How old is that?
That's like 10, I think.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. They're not... The hormones aren't kicking in yet, but they're... When they're younger, they don't mean any harm. They just can't follow instructions. They're... You know, the ability to pay attention is so limited that they just wander off and they go, hey, where are you going?
Yeah.
And once they get about 10, they know that they're supposed to sit in their chair or they're not supposed to get up and wander off.
But what did you do? You went to college for teaching?
No, I went to college and got a degree in engineering.
What does that mean?
It's a strange story. I was on the rodeo team in high school.
All right, hold on, back up.
Yeah.
Wait.
This all ties in. But yeah, let's back
but
up.
But wait.
Okay.
All right, so rodeo team, engineering, substitute teaching, comedy, Austin. All right, where'd you grow up, man?
Reno, well, like 15 miles north of Reno, Nevada.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Why there? What kind of sordid business?
So my parents met in New Mexico. They went to college there.
I grew up in New Mexico.
I did know that.
Did some research?
I watched the show. No, I've seen the first season of the show. I liked it.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, it was good. And they met... In college.
At University of New Mexico?
New Mexico State.
Down in Las Cruces?
Las Cruces, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I was there a while ago and saw some of like their old college friends. Well, it was probably like 5 or 6
in
years
Las
ago.
In Las Cruces?
In Las Cruces,
They're still down there? They're college friends? People don't leave Las Cruces? They never, said, this is it?
Yeah, they said, we're gonna
settle in Las Cruces, New Mexico?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It has some pretty qualities. There's a rock outcropping I enjoyed.
Well, it's like southern New Mexico. There's some stuff down there. It's not too far from White Sands or Carlsbad Caverns, I think. You can, you know, it's sort of like some of the landscape is sort of Texan in a way.
Oh, definitely.
But yeah, I mean, okay. Cruces is all right. It's a real city. Yeah. And that's an overstatement. It's a thing.
It's got that, there's like a dairy or something there you have to drive through that's just.
Creamland Dairy, maybe? There's a dairy? A dairy.
It might be a slaughterhouse, but it's a lot of cattle. It's a feedlot for sure, but it smells the whole town up. So that's what I think of Las Cruces.
The stink
of Las Cruces.
Not far from, you know, where atom bombs were conceived or tested anyways. So, all right, so they meet there. And what's your old man? What do they do?
So my mom had been done a little bit of rodeo type stuff, barrel racing, that sort of thing. But she was actually getting her degree in like animal science.
Hold on a second. Your mom had done a little barrel racing. you kind of throw that away, like, you know, like stuff moms do. Barrel racing, some rodeo stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And she...
So you come from horse people.
Kind of. My dad, though, was born and raised in Los Angeles or like the Camarillo area.
Yeah.
And I think was one of those guys that... had an affinity for like the cowboy lifestyle and then went to college and got a degree in like range management. And then after college got offered a job.
Range management.
Yeah. That's a thing.
Like a rancher.
Yep.
So that, well, of course that's a job. That means like, you know, let's say you got a herd or two, got a certain amount of land.
Yeah.
You got certain lots that they can go and into and out of. You got certain gates you got to keep open and closed. You got to make sure wells are working. You got to make sure there's hay and whatever you're feeding the thing. It could be several different kinds of animals.
Yeah, my dad's real good with knowing like different types of plants and how many animals you can have at a certain amount of water if a spring or a well is giving off however many cubic
feet. He can test how many gallons are coming out versus how many cows are going to drink it and what each cow will drink.
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't really seen him do too much, but I do know walking.
You haven't
through.
Seen the hands-on range management expertise of your father?
No, sadly.
That bond?
Like, like when we go fishing, he'll point out like, that's this type of bush. That's about the most I've seen of it. I'm like, this guy knows the name of bushes, but beyond that.
Can you eat it or not? Will we be eating that?
My dad got a job offer to be a foreman of a ranch like 50 miles north of Reno. And so he and my mom moved out to where the mailbox was like 10 miles away. I mean, there's nothing. It's just a long dirt road. and this ranch back in there. And so I spent the first 3 years of my life there, and then they got divorced and we trickled down into Reno. And then
Reno is there. Like, I've never been there, but in my mind and in my heart, the one or two times I was there, it felt like a morally bankrupt place.
Yeah, it's hard for me to...
Am I wrong? Maybe, see, like, there's people in Reno going to take that personally. Maybe it isn't. It's just like, it's not Vegas.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, I don't know. It seems like the next stop over.
Yeah, it has a charm. It has a personality, and people... There's an old Reno that's great. I mean, everything that Colorado is sort of revered for, of like biking and mountains and lakes and all, there's all of that there. People, whatever you'd want to find outdoorsy, it's there.
Nevada's beautiful.
It's gorgeous. It's like 4,500 feet there. It's at the foothills of the Sierras.
And it is cowboy country.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like there's a certain type of cowboy that comes out of, I think, California, Nevada, Colorado. I mean, they're Oklahoma cowboys.
Yeah.
Texas cowboys, but there's definitely a real ranch, you know, oriented, you know,
right,
real American cowboy up there.
I was in Iowa once, and I saw these guys come in with like spurs on their boots, and I was like, you don't even have hills here. Like, we used to like ride our horses over really rocky, dangerous stuff.
You did?
Yeah, yeah. I spent a lot of my like high school years doing ranch work and stuff. And so...
What?
Yeah. Like, it's pretty...
Was that the one, the rodeo club times?
That's where it came in, yeah. I always roped, you know, like just branding calves and things like that.
You branded?
Yeah, I've branded and all that. And
So your dad's a ranch engineer, what is it?
He was like the foreman of that.
But
ranch.
What was the name? What was his?
Range management.
Range management.
Yeah.
And your mother was a rodeo barrel racer.
Yeah.
Is it a race? A barrel race?
She was a barrel racer.
A barrel racer.
Yeah.
On the horse, whipping around those barrels.
Whipping around the barrels. Her parents used to let her, when she was like 15, just take off with the truck and trailer and a CB radio. And just head off to rodeos, and she would compete. And she had this horse that was kind of like a wunderkind of barrel racing horses. If you left barrels in a corral, he would just race them on his own. He just really
dug it. So this is your pedigree is, you know, livestock and agriculture people and horses.
Yeah.
All right. So your parents divorce.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Reno.
Yeah.
With your mom.
With my mom through. And then we moved to Lemon Valley, which is north of Reno. It's so strange. It's our address had Reno on it, so I never associated being in like a small town, but it was like one stoplight, a general store, a school, and some houses.
When did your mom decide, like, we got to get this kid on a horse? Was that something that was a no-brainer for her? Like, at some point?
Yeah, when I was like one, there were pictures of me being led around on the back of a horse. And then
it was important to them.
It just was what they did. You know, they had horses and...
You had horses as a child.
Yeah. Yeah. I grew up with horses. And then as we moved into the city more, and neither of my parents made a ton of money,
yeah,
we were like those people that had horses, but it was a struggle. You know, we were always trying to
keep the
hunt.
Horse.
Yeah. Yeah. Always figuring out ways to like fix fences or come up with feed for cheap and stuff.
That's
like that.
That's a sad time.
Ah, it was fine. I mean, I'm sure for them, it was a lot more of a struggle.
Did you ever have to put a horse down?
Yeah, that barrel racing horse that ran the barrels of my mom's.
The amazing horse.
Yeah.
He got
real old and angry. He would just like try to attack people.
Like anything old, usually.
Yeah, and it was not fun to... Have you ever seen that happen? I mean...
What, to a horse?
To just an animal in general.
Where they get really old and they're just like... They look like little old people and they're just mad.
You can see all their bones. Yeah, they're just mad. Their eyes get real sunken.
So because it was so well cared for, it probably outlived... Its expectancy.
Yeah.
And it knew it. It's like, I should be dead.
Oh, absolutely. I think he's just like, I can't, there's nothing I can do in here to end it myself.
So who had to take, put it down?
My mom called a vet out. And
oh, you
then,
did that way.
Yeah. Just.
For some reason, in my mind, shot. I thought I just wanted to, I pictured you shooting a horse.
That almost happened once. My dad had an older horse. Like, so my mom's college horse was that one.
Or, yeah.
You know, younger horse. And then I learned to ride on both of these horses. And my dad had one that a few years later was in the same shape, just grossly, you know, bony and ugly. And
yeah,
the vet came out and gave him a shot.
Yeah.
And we thought like, oh, it's going to boost him up. He'll be back. He'll be all healthy again.
Yeah.
And then the horse, my dad and I were out on the porch. He started walking through a ditch and then he started to go up the other side. There's maybe like a foot and a half of water and his knees got all wobbly and he fell over backwards into the water.
Yeah. Oh, and he broke
So I
that
ran
thing?
Out there. No, he just, his head was underwater.
Oh my God.
So I ran out, jump in the water and lift his head up. And this is the craziest thing. It should have been really traumatic.
Yeah.
I was probably like 16 or 17. The horse just goes, and I see his eye roll over, sees me along the way, but just like rolls back in his head and then dead. Just this horse I'd like learned to ride on, just laying there kind
in
of my
arms?
Lap. Yeah.
His head?
Yeah, but not in a weird traumatic way. It wasn't even that impactful emotionally. My dad came out, he was holding a gun, thought he was going to have to like shoot him. And he just looked at me, he's like, are you okay? I was like, yeah, I think I'm fine with this. It was way easier to see that than the shot. The needle, you know, that my other horse had to do, or my mom's horse.
Because you had to sit there with the horse as it died.
Yeah, it's just
weird.
Do you
get emotionally connected to these animals?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's a weird thing where, you know, horses, you spend so much time with them and on them, and it's quiet out there that, you know, a rabbit will jump or something, and they move, and you just kind of move with them, or you sense their body language, and there's definitely a connection.
Between you and your animal.
Yeah, yeah, it's a symbiotic. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. I always enjoyed that about like the Native Americans, sort of their ability with horses. I'm sure a lot of people would think that was weird spiritual nonsense, but there's definitely something there.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Like what more than, you know, twitching? What do you feel like when you get to know a horse? Because I was petrified of horses
because
I went to a camp and for a couple of years with a horse, and they're just too big
and
they sensed my fear. And I didn't know how to navigate a relationship with them or take control of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine since you were around them for so long, that it was sort of second nature. You never thought like, well, this horse is going to get the best of me necessarily.
Yeah. I had a horseshoeing business out of college. I did it through college as well to just make money, putting shoes on horses.
Where'd you go to college? Where business was something you could do?
I went to Fort Collins, which is in
Colorado. Yeah.
Yeah.
You had a shoeing business while you were in college?
Yeah, I was working at this Italian place. And
what does that mean, an Italian place?
Like making paninis.
Oh, okay.
And I was making no money and I wasn't getting enough time to study. And then I was like, someone needed a horse shod. And I was like, I could make 50 or 60 bucks in like an hour or two as opposed to what I'm making here in a week. So I just like put an ad out and started going around and doing that.
How do you do that?
You know, like the thrifty nickel, things like that. Do you remember?
No, but how do you shod horses?
Oh, my dad, when I was younger, his back wasn't too great. So I'd watch him struggle with it. And then I'd be like, just let me help you. So when I was like 14, he kind of gave me some pointers and showed me how to do it. And then.
But you like, I'm picturing a blacksmith making the shoe. You can buy the shoe, or did you actually hammer out the shoe? You bought the
shoe. I've done both. As I got into it more, I bought a forge and like could, you know, blacksmith the shoes a little bit.
Really?
Not from bar stock. Like a lot of people do that. But I would buy, like just kind of blank shoes. And then, you know, you just tweak
shape
them a little bit. Yeah.
But you're in college.
Yeah. So I start shoeing horses. The end of that story is that I was working for a guy when I moved to San Diego after college, and I went into a pen and just the horse turned its butt to me and I just shoved it away, which is a standard kind of a horse move, but if you didn't know horses, that would look really weird.
Like, yeah.
And he was just kind of like, oh, all right, you can work for me. You kind of know what you're doing.
Wait, this was in San Diego?
Yeah.
But wait, let's get back to the, you're like, I'm done making sandwiches.
Yeah.
Might as well put an ad in the paper to, you know, shoe horses.
Yeah.
There were enough horses in the Fort Collins area.
Yeah, San Diego was the best. Colorado, they're all spread out. Everyone owns some.
I just want to know where you set up. Were you in a dorm room?
Yeah.
You were in a dorm room.
I would drag my anvil like up into the room.
No, you're lying?
I'm dead serious. And then I had a pickup truck, and when I got a call,
did you have a
take
roommate?
All my gear. Yeah.
You had a roommate.
I had a roommate.
And you were the guy who had an anvil, and you're hammering horseshoes.
Yeah.
And he's what, smoking weed? What's he doing?
He lived in Colorado Springs. He worked at Red Lobster. So we're both bringing terrible smells into that room. Him smelling like, you know, cooked fish.
And you're smelling like horses.
Yeah.
But you got an anvil.
Yeah.
And you're like, are you studying? Because I need to hammer out, need to pound some horseshoes.
Oh, I wouldn't be pounding anything in the room. That's all on site.
Oh, so you you just brought the anvil out of the truck because you didn't want no one to take it?
Exactly, yeah.
Steal your anvil. That was your college
concern. I got an anvil stolen in my life that my great-grandfather had given to my uncle who gave to me and someone
anvils
stole it.
Anvils are passed down in families?
Well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, because no one needs them. So I'm sure my uncle was like, I'm going to give you this. But in his head, he's like, thank God I can get rid of this.
Just a big piece of metal.
It's just weight, yeah. It's this giant piece of weight.
So you lost your family anvil?
Mm-hmm.
Because someone took it.
It was a big deal. Like, it was something that my dad and I were like, we'll never tell anyone. We could not share this.
Who was there to tell?
My uncle. My dad thought my uncle was going to, I don't know what he would have done, but we were both scared. Like, this is a family keepsake and you lost it, you irresponsible.
Did you cry?
I drove back to where I thought it had been and like knocked on doors. Went around to strangers. Have you seen an anvil laying around out here in the street?
Uh-huh.
And they were like, no, I think I would know that if I saw an anvil.
But that was important.
Absolutely, yeah. I was so mad. I hate losing things, and especially something that had, you know.
The heirloom anvil.
Yeah, this our one family thing.
All right, so you got your anvil in your dorm room, and so you got a truck. You bought a pickup. You grew up with pickups.
Grew up with pickup trucks, yeah.
See, it's weird. Like, I didn't know you, I didn't know, I've seen some of your comedy, and we've talked briefly here and there, and no idea. There's no idea. I thought you were like David Steinberg or something. You were like this, pretty smart, do kind of straight up stand up, not too much goofiness.
Mm-hmm.
Just intelligent jokes. And now we're talking about heirloom anvils.
Yeah, I mean, everyone probably runs into this, but people always tell you who you are. They go, oh,
you're one of those guys. Oh, yeah, they could never quite label me. You're the angry guy. You're the neurotic guy. You're the guy. I don't know what I am.
Yeah, but
I didn't think you were the horse guy.
No, and I kind of like that when I saw like the blue collar thing become so popular, I thought like, Jeff Foxworthy worked at IBM. There's no way he's done as much blue collar stuff as I have. But I just.
All right, but okay. So you made sound. You roped. Let's go back to this roping business.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you learn how to rope? So I mean, you you could go into a Western store,
mm-hmm.
but not just like a shirt and boots place.
Yeah.
But a place that sells grain and ropes.
Right.
And you'd be like, not this one. I like this is a good one. This had a good feel to it. It's got a good weight to it.
Yeah, yeah. There's 3/8 and 5/16 and then different lengths. So, and it's hard on your, I rope right-handed, so like your left hand's holding all the coils. So
that's weird, I do too. Yeah, generally when I'm roping, I rope right-handed.
You rope right-handed?
Yeah, I do.
We could team up then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we have a different definition of roping.
My dad made me rope a bucket, I think 30 times in a row, and then I could like get on a horse and try it out. And then when I was probably like 12 or 13, I got decent at it. And then
you started roping calves?
Yeah, then being out, like you go out to doctor calves. So it's like, well, we got to give them some medicine. So then it was just chasing them down and roping them.
So you can just like fucking ride right next to a running cow and rope it and then pull it and then you jump off?
Well, it's not like in the rodeo, if you're in a pasture and there was a sick calf, they're not running at full speed most of the time. Every now and again they are, but they're sick. So a lot of times they're just dogged. And so then you rope them and kind of slow them down gently, hop off your horse quietly and kind of work the rope down and, get them on their side and stuff. So it's not as quick and aggressive as you'd see in the rodeo.
Right. So you have a symbiotic relationship with a horse and you've owned, how many horses have you had in your lifetime?
There have been a lot that have come in and out of my possession, but as far as like ones that I paid for and actually owned, I owned one when I was 12 until I was 20, and then I had another one kind of concurrently with that I still technically own, but my dad looks after her.
She's still around?
Yeah, she's only 20, so she...
long do they live?
They live to be about 30.
Really?
Horses? 30, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And they're still functioning at 20?
Yeah, I roped on her at a branding last year, and she, she was fine. So
that's what you do when you go see your dad?
I hadn't in a while, and it felt good to kind of get back to that, oddly. Because I've lived in LA, I've kind of become this sort of like, guys, be gentle, be easy. There's a part of me that looks at it like, this is so archaic. Why don't we just use like blow darts and knock them down? And
uh-huh.
And then, you know, you start doing it and realize, like, their threshold for pain and all of that is way higher. They pop up and just shake it off and walk off.
Well, yeah, that was my question. So, some, you know, horses, you build a relationship with. Cows are stupid, right?
Cows, I always go back and forth on. There was once where a friend of mine and I worked on this ranch where we drove cows way up in the mountains and lived like 20 miles away from phones or TV for like the whole summer.
Yeah.
And at one point we had to gather a bunch of cows in this meadow and just kind of let them settle. And hey, so we were just sitting there like doing tricks off the back of our horses, like on the saddle. And all of a sudden this little calf came over and just kind of started sniffing and letting us pet him and stuff.
Yeah.
It was unsettling.
Yeah.
It was like he got it. That calf was like, hey, I know I'm not supposed to cross these boundaries, but fuck that, man.
It's great.
Yeah. So then I had a hard time after that thinking like, oh, that calf's going to be one of them.
Yeah.
The rest I don't care about so much. I think if you open the gate and let them go wild, they'd be killed immediately by other predators. But I felt so bad for this little one.
The gifted calf.
Right.
The special one. The one that gets it.
He gets it, man. It's the Goodwill Hunting of these calves.
So the branding thing. So you went back up a year ago. You've been living in L.A. how long?
5 years.
And your dad, like, he wears a hat. Do you put a cowboy hat on when you...
Yeah, I own a hat. I like wearing it, you know. But I...
You don't wear it here.
No,
Where do you keep it?
At my house, I have like a little hat rack I made and put it on there.
So you made a hat rack. Do you currently own an anvil?
Yes, I do. But again, it stays at my dad's, so I don't have it here in L.A.
Dad is where, up outside of Reno still?
Yeah, he lives about 30 miles east of there now.
So you go see your dad. You guys get along well?
Yeah. Yeah, we're in a good spot. We've gone through our trials and tribulations, but
what were those about?
Same old stuff as everybody, like substance abuse, those sorts of things.
What was your substance?
It was him. It was just him drinking and
Really?
Yeah. So we kind of, I don't know if you do this in your life, but I find people that have similar behaviors where like
that you grew up with?
Yeah.
That's all we do.
That's all everyone does, right?
Yeah, but you know, it's like the trick is like, you know, here's the fucked up thing about that is that once you're aware of that,
mm-hmm.
like you realize that like, well, the reason I can't meet a normal person is that it doesn't even register. What's going to register is this bullshit I came from.
Right.
So then you have to meet somebody who actually is symbiotic with you in that bullshit and hope that they're mindful enough to want to do it differently. So it's just like when you meet somebody and you're like, this feels great. That's the last time that'll feel great. Cause you're like, all right, this is real. So now we start working on it. So, like, you know, within a week, you're like, all right, that was the honeymoon phase. Now let's hammer this shit out because you're triggering all kinds of stuff in me.
Yeah.
I'm just dealing with that now.
I waited a long time, though, before being in a relationship. And I went through a lot of like, maybe he's just gay or maybe he's asexual or putting those things like being afraid to invite anyone in or being afraid to put all that on them. And now my girlfriend, she comes from like a cartoonishly well-adjusted family.
You thought you were gay?
No, other people would. You know, up to family events year after year with never bringing anyone home, they'd be like, all right, buddy, we get it.
Yeah, you're okay, it's okay. You know,
yeah.
Don't bring it around here, but we'll accept you.
Yeah, and I was just like, well, I'm fine with that. But
you were just shut down.
Yeah, a lot of high school, you know, not wanting to bring anyone home. So I just like, oh.
Why, was that bad?
It was pretty bad, yeah. It just was. We lived in a tiny house. And
Was just your dad, or he have a woman at that time, too?
Just my dad. Yeah, it was just my dad. But
so
like,
what was he like, angry drunk, or just...
Yeah, just pick at you, that sort of stuff, you know? Just
like from a table with a drink or from a chair?
It would start at the table, and then we'd sit down and watch TV, and he'd be in one sort of recliner chair, and I'd be in another.
Yeah.
And then you'd just feel the head turn toward you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, boy, here he comes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then...
And what was it?
It would just be, sometimes it would just be the staring, and then you think you're pretty good, don't you?
Oh, that.
Stuff like that. Still now, on occasion, I would never lay this on my dad, I don't think it's him, but, you know, would like self-esteem things be like, is it okay to feel, I feel all right, this is okay. I don't think I'm too cool, do I?
But that's interesting though. So did you find yourself involved with people that picked on you?
I just wouldn't let anyone in. I just was hardly ever involved with anyone at a level where like I would share anything like that, you know,
out of fear.
Fear, and then just being picky, also just being kind of like, I don't feel like I met anyone that really.
Well, when you get assaulted by, you know, a drunk dad emotionally, it has an effect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they know it's going to hurt you over and over again.
Yeah.
And you just learn how to sort of callous to it.
Yeah.
And that callous is what you walk through life with. You know, you just assume someone's going to come at you. Oh, you think you're all that, huh? You
yeah.
know, you're like, no, I'm just...
Yeah, there is something to that that I...
Yeah.
I let that callous go down, I think, quite a bit. And then when Tig was diagnosed with cancer, I was feeling things a lot more than I had in a long time. Like, oh, I'd let it kind of open up a little bit.
It's an amazing moment.
Yeah, it's really... I almost missed the callous. Like, ah, this...
Oh, yeah, it's exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also... you know, it shows that you care and that your heart is functioning properly. You know, the other option is just to feel. And if you've shut down the feelings long enough,
mm-hmm.
you know, all you can do is cry for the weird reasons. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, you know, like, as soon as you don't do all the things that you're used to and someone's coming at you with real pain or real emotion, you're just like, I don't know why this is happening, but I think it's good. I think I'm crying now. It's good, right?
This is good. This is what normal things
yeah.
feel like.
Yeah, it's crying. I'm not yelling. I'm not running away. I'm just crying. So when Tig got cancer, you felt?
Yeah, I felt a little bit like exactly that. Like, oh, this is normal. This is probably how most people should process this.
Yeah, and, yeah. It's okay. You can handle it.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't like someone was going to pop out like, are you crying, you pussy?
Well, you guys were pretty close. I mean, were you guys doing the podcast every week and you were friends? I mean, how'd that podcast come about, the Blast Off? How do you know her?
Well, we lived together. I met her at Last Comic Standing in 2006. And then I lived in Austin then, and when she would come through, her and Martha Kelly were doing the Crackpot tour, and
uh-huh.
they, you know, check in with me, see if I want to be on the show, or we'd go out and have a meal. I think the second time they came through town with it, they stayed at my house.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just one of those, when I'd be here in LA, I'd, you know, have dinner with her or something. And at some point I was opening for her at, she knew I skied. So she invited me to Idaho. And we were in this little kind of bar just chatting about this and that.
Yeah.
And I was doing a lot of material. I guess I kind of always have about, like, you know, God and science and uh-huh. robots and things. And so, like, I think that'd be a good podcast. And she was like, I do too. And Kyle really likes that idea.
He lived with her too, right?
They're Dunnigan? Just real close. Oh. Yeah, Dunnigan's just real close with her. So she sent him a text and said, would you want to do that? And he said, yeah. And then she knew, you know, Scott and Jeff at Earwolf. And I mean, awesome. I knew Scott as well. But
How often do you do Professor Blastoff? Once a week?
Once a week. Yeah, it comes out every Tuesday. And we've been doing it, you know, 2.5 years now, I think.
Well, okay. So let's go back to... Let's go back. All right. So you got you go to high school, you're roping. So like when you get, is your dad still drinking?
Yeah, he still is. It's weird. He's kind of gotten into a level now where I will never drink with him just out of principle, just out of a lifetime of like, I trust you now. I feel like you are a guy that can have a couple beers, but I still, it's just, it's too
don't
much.
Don't let your guard down.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's got to feel horrible for him. Like, oh, my own son, I can't even sit down and have like a couple beers with, but I just feel like
you blew it.
So,
did you ever have a physical fight with him?
No, my sister told me once that my dad was like kind of preparing for that though.
Oh really?
Yeah. Like, I think I'm going to have to fight him and I will.
He was training?
Yeah. I don't know what he was doing, drinking more, but I never wanted to fight him. But yeah, it seemed like kind of like it might get hostile a couple times.
Because you're trying to, you know, find your own way. And at some point you got to stand up to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd lived with my mom going into high school. And then once high school came, I decided to go live with my dad. And so I lived far away from all my friends. I lived like on the opposite end of town. It's just me and my dog out there basically. And then I had these horses and I got a job riding horses for this guy that was really wealthy, which was great. He had these...
Riding them?
Yeah, just exercising his horses. So he had really nice horses.
Did he sit there and watch you? That's it.
No, he was like 5 feet tall
uh-huh.
and a millionaire.
Yeah.
So weird dynamic there.
Yeah.
And he would come over and hike up the stirrups or put on a new saddle with shorter stirrups
uh-huh.
and then he'd ride the horse. And so that I kept my mind on that a lot. You know, my horse at the time was real young, so I was kind of starting her out. And then I'd oddly gotten hired by a few guys around town to like break their horses. So I was like kind of a bronco buster for a while. And
really?
Yeah. So I could kind of like just put my effort into that. And I didn't come home after school usually and like hang out with my friends. I played sports, so I would like practice.
I imagine you take a warm bath and just sort of like You know, put some like Tiger Balm on.
I mean, just let it all come to me, man.
Well, no, but I mean, it's like it's got to beat you up.
They didn't buck that much. I mean, really. Oh. And as a kid, you know, it wasn't. You almost want that to happen, but for the most part, they're just gentle.
You're like talking about Mars to me. You're like, you almost want that to happen. No, frankly, no.
It's a fun feeling. Like when a horse really wants you off of it and you stay on, it's a very much like, now are you going to listen to me? And then you're friends after that.
Maybe, do you bring a little of that to your new relationship?
I gotta let her know straight away.
You're not getting out from under me. Yeah, now. Yeah. I'm gonna ride. I'm staying on. I'm gonna stay in the saddle no matter what. But all right. So where does comedy come into this, man?
Yeah. So that all started with like the reason I moved to Austin. I just always liked comedy. You know,
you
my
moved
sister,
to Austin from San Diego, but
from
you moved,
San Diego.
But you moved to San Diego for what? For horses.
My sister had been living there, and I'd done a little research and saw they had a comedy club and thought, like, well, the weather's definitely warmer than Colorado. It's pretty close to L.A., so I'll start there and kind of get my feet under me.
So it wasn't about horses?
Not necessarily,
no. You got into horses in San Diego, too?
Yeah, and everyone there, it's like a status symbol, so they all keep their horses in one place. It's just stables.
Yeah.
So that was great. I'd just drive to one spot.
And shoe them?
Shoe, you know, as many as I could get a hands on.
What's something like that pay?
You know... I would, to shoe a horse for, there's all kinds of different, you know, the corrective shoeing, but for four flat shoes, back then I think I was charging like $80.
And how often do they need new shoes?
Every 6 weeks to 2 months.
Okay.
So you get a steady, you get to know those people. And when I left Austin.
You get to know the horses?
You get to know the horses a lot. There were some, you know, it's weird now to live in Los Angeles and not really have that, because that was a good job. Regardless of what you're doing, you're helping animals, which felt great.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you shake someone's hand and get a check and go, okay, see you later. It's a very, like, wholesome endeavor.
Yeah, it's earnest. It's an honest buck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I liked that. I really thought, you know, they can see your work right there, too.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They look down and go, that nail's pretty horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. But I apprenticed for some guys there. I'd always kind of gone into it in Colorado, like, I know what I'm doing. I worked on ranches.
Yeah.
And then you come to find out, like, ranch shoers are the utilitarian. They're like hacky road comic of shoers.
Right. Their shoes probably won't last 6 weeks.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Just kind of. So you're troubleshooting all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. So I worked for these apprentices, or these guys that were really good. One guy wasn't anyway, and he taught me a lot of tricks. So then I went to Austin thinking, like, they got to have tons of horses down there, but Texas is so spread out.
Yeah.
I would have ended up driving. It was so hot that I never did any shoeing down there.
So you went to San Diego to do a little comedy, but you knew, you know, you were, your business was sort of shoeing horses. You knew how to do that. And they had that there. So that was good. That was your day job. You didn't have to go to the Italian place. And you're doing stand up at the La Jolla Comedy Store.
Mm-hmm.
Dark little fucking hole that is.
Yeah. And I wasn't feeling, you know, I mean, it was a good scene. I liked I'm still friends with some of the people, but I didn't feel artistically challenged a lot of the time. I just felt like it was people trying to tell the same joke at a louder volume than the previous person.
That's the Comedy Store style.
It seemed
bullied through it.
Yeah. And it being expensive and all that, but it seemed weird to me that LA was just up the street, and I knew I wasn't really where I wanted to be, and I thought Austin, I could kind of go get my bearings.
And still shoe some horses.
Yeah, yeah. It was like a good, I don't know what you would call it. Like, if you have something you can lean on, like, well, if nothing else, I could always just shoe horses.
It's Texas.
Yeah.
So you got to Austin.
I got to Austin. I ended up just substitute teaching, and then...
With your engineering degree.
With my engineering degree. And this was great. Like, you, in San Diego, it's like 50 pages and a background check and fingerprints. In Austin, it was like one piece of paper I filled out, and there's just a box, check here if you graduated from high school, check here if you graduated from college.
Yeah.
The difference in pay per day, $5.
Huh.
So my college degree earned me $5 more a day.
You just want a babysitter.
Yeah, exactly.
So what when you did the engineering degree, I mean, what were you thinking?
That's what the rodeo thing came up. I had to go get my transcripts or my grades signed off on by the school registrar every week that I wanted to go to a rodeo. And then you like send in an entry and an entry fee and all that. And so I got to know her fairly well. And she'd be like, are you going to go to college? And I was like, I really don't know what I would
study. But
what
were you doing in the rodeo? Just roping?
Just roping, yeah. I heeled. So I was like, if you've ever seen where someone ropes the horns and then it turns, I roped the back feet, the back legs.
Okay, right.
And
were you good?
I was all right. Yeah, I did okay.
You ranked?
No, my partner and I, we were pretty good. We were like that dark horse team where we won a couple times, but we'd win like individual rodeos. You have to win like every week, and we couldn't really afford to go that much. So our place in the points and the standings wasn't all that high.
Did you ever
high.
Hear of Dan Campbell?
That name sounds familiar, but I don't know.
He's a contractor now, but he's a big rodeo guy.
Oh, nice.
He built my closet.
Yeah, I know old Dan.
But I think he's a pretty big rodeo guy. He did some acting work and some stunt work. You know, he's like, he gave me a picture somewhere of him on a bucking bronco.
I know a lot of guys still that will travel down here, and you know, any big movie that has a lot of horses, there's always a need for experts and things like that. Yeah. So
you don't do that though.
No, I wouldn't even know how to get into it. I mean, I don't have horses I can like bring with me somewhere, but.
Well, you can ride one.
Yeah, if that thing ever came
maybe
up.
Maybe an indie film will need a guy who knows how to ride a horse.
Yeah, true. And then I'm the guy.
Yeah, that would have happened in Austin, I think. The indie cowboy movie. Where's that?
Yeah, why hasn't that? I had one that I wrote where this guy tells his sister that if her husband cheats on her or something, he's going to kill him.
Uh-huh.
And then you flash forward a few years and the guy's just been drinking and being a rodeo bum. And then the woman calls and goes, "Hey, so-and-so cheated on me." And then he sets out to kill this guy. Like that'd be the movie. Uh-huh. But he's like roping his way to get there and stuff. Uh-huh. I never put much thought into it, but
it sounds like there's a little thought into it.
There's something story. There. Yeah. I mean, I knew a lot of those guys that just live in like essentially RV campers,
uh-huh.
but can really rope or uh-huh. just amazingly.
They just love the thrill of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anything else in life doesn't appeal to them.
Yeah. Cause it's not immediate.
Yeah.
It's like comedy.
That's kind of where I was in Austin. I just wanted to do comedy. So yeah. I had to get all the other subbing and anything that was taking hours out of my day, I just thought like I could be writing. So I moved to this place where I lived in the green belt. I just had a porch that looked out onto trees and I would sit there with like my notebooks open with like to sketch comics and to write jokes. And then I would just sit there with them blank all day. I never had any thoughts for like the first month I was there.
Who was down there when you were there? Lucas and
Lucas
Bearden.
And I were, Bearden was kind of the class above me.
Was Brendan Walsh down there then?
Brendan, he was just starting to work the road when I got there. He and I would like wash dishes at the comedy club together.
Did you ever see me in Cap City? Was I ever there?
Yeah, I told you about that set where it was like 9 people and then you did like the Sprint commercial after that.
That's right. You were there?
I was there for that set. Yeah.
In the front room.
Yeah.
And those two women were there.
Yeah.
And I think Hunt Sales was there that night too. Soupy Sales' son, the drummer.
Oh, really?
And his chick. Yeah. That was like, you saw that?
Yeah. I was there all the time. I wanted to be like a comedy club rat or whatever for a better word. And so I ran dishes and I worked the phones during the day. And yeah, I saw everyone there. So I definitely saw that set and remember thinking like, this is great for a weird reason, but I think the reason is because it's kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad I gave you that experience. I'm glad I was the guy that showed you the heartbreak of your.
But it's awesome. I mean, so many.
I don't remember it being a bad set, really.
No, it was really fun. I stayed and watched the whole thing, which, you know, like how often do you do that?
Yeah.
And
it's interesting when I get into that situation because you can't really do material, so you kind of just kind of fly by the seat of your pants and
just your body language. Though you're like sitting on the stool, just crumpled.
I feel like that's become sort of a signature thing for me. Crumpled stoolage.
That was the impetus of it.
Yeah, it was probably the beginning of it. Yeah. Like, it just sort of, like, I seem to have leveled off in that. I do the stool thing.
The reading through the notes and looking up at the people and
no.
And
going that's not going
to. It was great. It was really fun to watch. And I always feel like you kind of put earmarks or things on people like they'll do it. And so you want to see you be successful. Now it does kind of reinforce that. Oh, okay. My instincts are okay. I have a good idea that who I think should or could get to a point beyond having 9 people in front of them.
Right. Right. Well, I think it wasn't a weekend night, was it? It's probably the Wednesday.
Yeah, it was like
the
Wednesday show. Yeah.
Yeah. But that room in back's big, dude. It's a big room.
Yeah.
I kind of like that front room.
Oh, the front room's great.
Yeah,
at
Cap City.
Yeah. You get like 80 people in there and it feels jam-packed.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, so you stayed in Austin for how long?
It was weird for me to get there and be at the bottom of open mics. Me and Lucas, my truck got broken into and someone stole my stereo and that was like...
Maybe the same guy who took the anvil.
That guy's following me and torturing me
for your whole life, just taking weird items.
Yeah, just stealing things. And that stereo had been passed down from my great grandfather.
Yeah, it's a classic AM/FM, you know, single speaker unit.
Yeah, so Lucas and I went everywhere. We did Art Max Hack Shack, which was this terrible little open mic. We just any place they had.
I like him. He's open for me occasionally.
Lucas?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's real funny. Yeah. And then my truck got broken into, and the manager of the club was like, to make it up for you, you could be on like the Mishmash show, which was kind of the showcase show.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then Margie saw me do that.
Margie.
And then Margie Coyle, she's the manager, kind of owner at Cap City. And so then they were like, you should do the contest, which was, I hated the idea of that was sickening to me.
Don't like it.
But they talked me into it, and then I did a spot for Comedy Central because of that. So I went from being dead last
on Premium Blend?
Yeah. So I was like last on all the open mics to suddenly like, oh, now he's going to do a TV spot. And then I did Last Comic
Standing.
Then
you had a few comics hating on you?
A little bit, but Austin was, I always liked that there wasn't a lot of that. It was a lot of like, this will be good for our scene. This will be good for us in general. Uh-huh. And so it was much more cathartic and sort of communal in the, let's be creative in all different ways.
Yeah, that's
and
cool.
Then,
that is a good community there. Yeah, because of that. Yeah,
I feel like it's one of the more artsy communities.
Oh, definitely. So you were there. When did you make the jump? Because Tig inspired you, or what?
So even having done a couple of TV spots, I would like email occasionally to clubs or you know people I knew to see if I could go work. I just wanted to go do comedy. And Eddie Gosling said I could middle for him in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Eddie.
And I was going to make $400. So I took the Greyhound bus, 26 hours up, 26 hours back. And then I was really like, oh man, I don't know if this road thing is the thing to do. And that's where Brendan was real helpful because when he was working the road a lot then, we'd be like washing dishes and he was, you know, very much like, it's going to suck, but it's good for you.
Yeah.
So then I got
a straight up dude, that guy.
Yeah, yeah, good guy.
Yeah.
And I got a call from an agency after Last Comic Standing and they just started looping me out on the road a bunch. So
what do you mean? You did Last Comic Standing?
Yeah.
Well, okay, before we get to there. So you got to know the registrar when you were signing out to go rope things and you go to college and you got an engineering degree.
Uh-huh.
Was that just by default? You didn't really
know? She goes, you know, I think you're kind of similar to my husband and my son and they're both engineers. You should look into that. And so I got accepted to a school. I was going to just stay in Reno, and a friend of mine kind of backed out of that deal. And so I just sent in my, yes, I'm coming there. And you check a box what you want to major in. I just checked engineering.
And you went the whole ride?
Yeah, I'm just stubborn. I read books all the way through. I watch a movie all the way through. I mean, engineering did not start great. My GPA was horrible. My parents sat me down like, hey, if we're going to keep you in this, you got to prove to us that you want to be there and you got to get better grades. And I was like, why?
Yeah.
I'm doing my best. And they were like, oh, okay, just keep doing that then.
Did you learn anything in engineering?
Yeah, I passed the EIT, or they call it the FE, which is like essentially saying, all right, maybe you got good grades, but now you have to pass this practical thing if you ever want to
What's
be an engineer.
What's on that?
It's just everything you've learned in 4 years.
What do you learn in engineering?
So I did civil, which is a lot of structural things, the forces. They should, when you go into it, just tell you like, hey, have you ever seen a building or just anything in life and wondered like how it's built?
Yeah.
What sort of forces it has to withstand? It's that. So it's the how much you have to pre-stress like the rebar and concrete.
So an engineer basically becomes sort of a state inspector in a way.
You become the builder ant.
Right.
Like we want to put more people pissing and shitting on the other side of the river over there. We need a bridge.
Yeah.
And that's what really didn't appeal to me. Like, I don't like people that much. I don't want them to keep spreading over the planet.
Yeah.
I'll entertain them. That's as far as I'll go though.
That was the thing. It's like, they don't need to be on the other side of the river.
Yeah.
I don't want to be part of this.
Yeah. That's how I felt really. It's just like, I don't want to be part of this. This is gross. And it was just real boring too.
Yeah, yeah.
I had like an internship where I got to do all this fun soil sample taking and stuff, but they were like, that's a job for the intern.
Yeah.
When you work here, you'll just be behind a computer. And I was like, ugh, I don't want to do that.
So now, like so you do Premium Blend out of Austin. So things are starting to happen. And you audition for Last Comic Standing in Austin?
Yeah. I worked at the club and didn't want to do it. I came in, just was like working the phones. And they were like, you know, Bob and Ross, I think, were the guys from... They're here, and if you don't go, they'll be very upset. They'll be really offended if you don't do it. And I was like, I don't like the show. I think it's gross. And they were like, you know, they booked a tonight show. If you don't do this, you'll really be... So I was like, fine, I'll go do it. and I did a set and then, you know, moved on and went and did the whole, I hated it.
What season were you?
Season four.
You did the house and everything?
No, I did the theater where they narrow it down to like 40 or something like that. So,
and that was the end of it?
Yeah. And then went home from that. And
thank God.
Yeah, I was really, there's still parts of that that bug me. We had this sketch show that we were doing. We had like a show planned on, say, like Sunday. But if we got cut from Last Comic Standing, we'd be home Saturday. So I was like, let's keep our show. Let's not cancel it. And my friends were like, no, you'll probably end up staying in the house. Let's cancel the show. And so as soon as we got cut, I was like, damn it. Why didn't we just keep, this is the thing I want to be doing. I don't want to be on this dumb show.
But it got you a little traction.
Yeah, it's like anything, everything I've hated has really worked out better for me than the things I really wanted to do.
Well, it was the best of both worlds. You didn't have to be dragged through the humiliation of those final rounds.
Right,
and you got a little attention.
A little bit, yeah. And you get to tell your jokes on NBC. I mean, that's not the worst thing. So, yeah, in hindsight, it was a good thing, and I should have probably been a better sport about it.
I don't know. I don't necessarily think people fare that well in the long run from doing that show.
Yeah.
It's like Star Search.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, if you win or you place, you get a good run for a couple of years, and then you're just back sort of not too far from where you were before.
Yeah.
A lot of people anyways.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a testament to them. It's just the nature of that thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that, you know, it's not about comedy as much as it is about, you know, people investing in the personality through the process of the reality show element.
Yeah.
And wanting to support somebody.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember my mom calling me going, there was this little guy on American Idol with kind of bad teeth, and he didn't have the best stage presence, but I just really liked him. And I was like, that's everything wrong with it. He's not a good artist. You just feel sorry for him.
That's not fair. I guess it's sympathy or empathy or I don't know. You know, people like seeing the struggle of people. And people like seeing normal people or people that don't feel that different from them, you know, succeeding somehow. Even if it's just winning the lottery.
Right. So, but you're like sort of, it seems not compelled, but you create, you're making, and you know, by the titles, like, you know, Tickets Still Available, things like that.
That trilogy, the Not Sold Out, Tickets Still Available, Final Engagement. I thought it was really a plan. I thought I was going to be out after Final Engagement. I thought that was really going
to
be it.
But wasn't there a freedom to that where you're kind of left to do your own thing? There wasn't pressure.
Well, yeah. Oh, no, there was pressure. There was internal pressure. But I mean, really what it came down to was that I couldn't do it any other way, you know, and I was, I don't know if it was ambition or just persistence that, you know, I don't think I ever got into it to entertain people. I just got into it because I thought that was where I could talk and I could make my own choices.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was always very frustrated. It's like, if only just wrote nicer jokes or if I wrote jokes at all, it would be good. So it was never like, I never really appreciated the freedom of it until now, until the podcast, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the big payoff is that, you know, I truly am free and I can do this. And, you know, and then some people, now more people like me and they will come see me do the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all very, you know, I'm very true to myself.
Yeah.
And I'm accepted for that. Mm-hmm. Like before, it was like I was true to myself because I didn't know how else to be. And it seemed like most people didn't like it. And that's not the greatest feeling in the world.
No.
You know, I wasn't functioning on principle. Like, fuck them. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm me and they better like it. You know, it was sort of like, I don't know what else to do.
I'm giving you everything I can think of.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, it was touch and go, dude, for a long time. So after Last Comic, you move out here?
I did the road. I bought a station wagon. Through a weird series of circumstances where a friend of mine had a friend whose wife was in a sorority, and because I had my pickup truck, I'm like, I can't work the road. It's an 8-cylinder, you know, old pickup truck. And so we wrote this sketch. They were like, we've got a budget of $2,000. I know it's not a lot. I was like, tell them we'll do it for $2,000.
Yeah.
So we didn't make that much to write like a 3-page script for like their rush activity.
Okay.
Yeah. So we wrote this thing and they paid us, you know, enough for me to buy like $1,000 station wagon.
Uh-huh.
And I bought it like on a Friday and I think Saturday did a gig in El Paso.
So you run around in a station wagon.
Yeah.
Gigs.
I hauled my dog around with me a bunch and
you still have the dog?
He's going to be 14 soon. I mean, he's heading toward the end.
Dogs and horses.
Yeah.
Well, the guys I've known that grow up in a way that you do, you know, not necessarily riding, but in, you know, ranch situations, they're very sort of like, you know, they may get emotionally involved with animals, but they do know there's a limit to it.
Oh no, I'm a baby.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I talk to my dog in an annoying way. I'm probably a lot like a Beverly Hills.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying you're not loyal, but you understand that, you know, animals die. And,
yeah.
But like, because I there was one guy, Jim Geppner, who I had a mouse problem in a story, and I could not see mice as anything but little animals. And he's mm-hmm. like, they're vermin. you're like cockroaches. You just kill them like bugs. I'm like, no, but they're furry. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
But he grew up in a ranch. You know, and he just had this sensibility about animals that was different.
Oh, I'm not that way. Because I split time. I didn't grow up on a ranch. I mean, I was around
them. You know
them.
Those people?
That oh, are I right definitely here? Do. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Put it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The dog got loose and got into the cattle. Shoot it.
Yeah.
Those. And that to me, if you could put a mic on me when I was out riding through the cows, you'd hear me talking to my horse going, good boy, you're doing great. Like, just such a pussy. When yet, like, hey, rope that thing, you got it, you know. Yeah, and just seeming tough, but
yeah.
When I'd have, like, you know, a rope tight on my horse tied to a calf, I'd be like, that a boy, keep holding them. I wasn't as tough and rugged as everyone else, because I'd go be in the city and go, you know, not the city, but on a ranch. So
right.
I had to kind of wear two different
hats, or wear a hat and not a hat.
A hat and not a hat, yeah. But I tried
to. Secret hat life.
No one will ever know. I remember once in seventh grade wearing Wranglers, and they were like kind of my laundry pants.
Yeah.
And people making fun of me endlessly. Oh, look at this shit kicker. Hey, hillbilly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then so I was like, I'm never wearing my Wranglers again. That was so embarrassing.
Wranglers were the pants, though, right?
No, it was Levi's or nothing.
No, but I mean, when you're really doing work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you want to actually be using something that's not going to rip, Wranglers for sure. And then in eighth grade, this kid moves to town who wore Wranglers just because he dressed like a cowboy, but he was a new kid, so he was cool. Everyone starts wearing Wranglers. It's the thing to do. And then so same thing happens. Laundry day, I'm wearing the Wranglers.
Yeah.
Look at you, you follower. I had to deal with that. I was like,
you should have challenged that guy to a rope off.
I know. I would have destroyed him, but never did. And I wonder what, because I doubt he ever was around horses or something. His life was probably kind of sad in that way. He was reading magazines saying, oh, horsey. And I was getting to go out and do all that stuff. But I tried to keep a lot of that to a degree, like with my dumb station wagon. Like I'd have my fishing pole in the back or my dog. Just
pull over and fish?
I wanted to. I just wanted to think that you don't have to sacrifice everything to do comedy.
Yeah, I like that. What that meant to you is having your dog and your fishing pole and your hat.
Yeah.
And your anvil. So you're driving around doing road gigs with an anvil, a hat, a fishing pole, and a dog. You're like, I got integrity still.
I'm still me.
You should have pulled them all up on stage, could have been like Dimitri Martin.
Yeah. Ooh. Show everyone my life.
Yeah, so it'd be like a sort of a highbrow prop act.
They're just for show, folks. Doing my regular act.
Just bring an anvil up there, set it on a stool, and not mention it. And then at the end, go like, I shoo. If anyone needs a. Is that what you would say? I'll shoe it. Yeah. So you move out here after the road experience.
Well, Tig would call me a lot. I spent 2 years just staying on friends' couches, and it was really the most artistic I think I got to be. I hauled around my scanner, and I would just draw comics in hotel rooms.
Do you publish comics?
I haven't published them in any sort of books or anything like that. I've sent them out and been resoundingly rejected or just ignored. But I've always put them on my website and just...
What's your website?
DavidHuntsberger.com.
Okay.
And it was just a thing, you know, you need it. You need some sort of outlet like that.
Yeah.
And I didn't play music, so I just drew a lot. And
yeah.
That really felt like a free time. I didn't have rent. I didn't have a relationship. I didn't have really bills. And so 2 years just zipping around and doing comedy, it was great.
You got hard.
Yeah, I think I got, you know, built up a little bit of that weird callus.
Yeah.
And then Tig called and said they were looking for a roommate. And I said, no, thanks. I don't really want to live in LA.
Yeah.
And then a few months later, it's like, we're still looking. And, and then the economy really tanked, and a lot of like the little gas money gigs you would get and some of the other clubs were shutting down. And I was like, this might be a sign. So I moved to LA, and I don't know if it was a good move, but at least, you know, I'm steady now.
You're doing all right.
I'm getting by. I'm not flourishing. Kind of like,
why not?
I don't think I was one of those people that envisioned it or came in with a plan. I just thought, like, that Mitch Hedberg joke. Like, I got into comedy to do comedy, which is weird.
Yeah.
And they were just sending me out on a lot of auditions for, like, you seem like you'd host, like, an E-Channel show.
Yeah, that's what they, yeah, that's how they think. Because they think that, like, a comic, that's a job that we're available for.
Yeah, it's like a party favor. Yeah. Oh, you can just be funny. It's a thing you
have.
It's a
fucking death knell, man. When you do those interstitial things, the guy holding the mic stuff. I mean, you get those. You know, I did a few of those. And there's always this pitch from your management, like, no, it'll be good. You learn how to read prompter. You learn how to do this. Yeah. You learn how to wear other people's clothes. You know, you can be yourself. That's always the killer.
Yeah.
You know, they just want you to be you. And then you get there and you're like, I got to be me and read that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then more energy. That's all I ever heard. A little more energy. Like, you said I could be me. This is.
Get me a horse. I'll show you energy.
So yeah, I don't think me and this town ever synced up in like what was maybe expected and what I wanted to
time,
do.
There's time.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But I mean, like from just talking to you, I feel like you should find yourself a horse situation here.
Oh yeah, that'd be great.
Why don't you?
I have no idea.
What do you mean? There's horses out there.
Oh, you mean like shoe horses in Burbank?
Well, no, just go find one you can ride.
Yeah, it's a thing. It's like skiing.
How much does a horse cost?
Depends on what you want, you know. If you could
like
get
a mid-range horse.
Mid-range horse that you could enjoy. You could find one for $1,500.
Okay, so you get a $1,500 horse, and then what does it cost to put it up?
It's expensive hay right now because the drought is outrageous. So
You're up. I like that you keep up on the hay prices, or you talk to your dad.
Hear it. My dad's telling me, and everyone's I hear it. So. But I don't have anyone I can go like chew on the end of straw with me. Yeah, hay is going up.
Yeah,
it's a damn.
I'm
thing.
Glad that you know you're on top of that shit.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm sure I could get my skiing at Big Bear. Just feels like wee. You know,
it's not much of a mountain.
It's not much
or
there.
Mammoth.
Mammoth's great. You know. So if I do ski, that's where I go. I try to go up near the Sierras. But the same thing with riding. I don't want to just go ride out and do a trail ride.
It's just
one of those weird things where like if you've ridden a horse with like a purpose, like I'm going out to gather some cattle or what, it's hard to be like, now I'm just gonna go do it for fun.
No, I know.
It's the equivalent of like, why don't you go take a drive in your car? Like, I don't do that.
So that feeling that you had when whatever a year ago was when you went back to your dad and you actually did some branding, a branding, as you said. So a branding is like you do a bunch of cows.
We do like, I think that day maybe like 150.
So that's a hell of a day's work.
Well, there's a squad though. You know, they're probably.
Yeah, but still.
It's a lot of work. Yeah, it's dusty.
But like
and
you
dirty.
Hadn't done it in a while. So you're visiting your dad and he's like, you know, I don't know if you still want to do this anymore, but we got branding kind of thing or what?
He just mentioned like, hey, your uncle's going to brand some calves this weekend. And he kind of tells me that every year. And so if I'm going to be out of town or whatever, a lot of times like, I can't. I'm going to be wherever.
Does he actually need your help or does he want to spend time with you?
Both. We go fishing and we have a great relationship, you know. We bond a lot in these sort of things, and like my dad really dug that I came home and
did
like,
the brand.
I got your saddle. I did this thing to it, or you know, things like that. Yeah, he wants to make sure it's a good experience, and then his horse is my horse's son, so that's kind of cool that we're riding like relatives. So we both like were out there roping at the same time. My girlfriend got some great photos of me having one calf like around the neck and my dad roping its feet and that sort of thing, and. It's not something you would like pressure me into. Like, this is your heritage. You got to come home.
No, but it's like something you do together.
Oh yeah, totally. And I liked it. It really did feel like I still have my old pickup truck. It just sits in a yard, and I have my horse trailer right behind it. And
where
I just feel
outside same of Reno?
That one's actually at some. My mom's old neighbors, who are friends of mine, just said, "Yeah,
you got
you
a
can
truck
leave it
and
here.
A horse trailer sitting there."
Yeah. And I know I have to get it out of there, but it's kind of like my link to that world. And living in LA and kind of, I don't have those things. I don't have space. Yeah. I don't have open areas.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, well, I still have this last little sliver of that left. And I, want to kind of keep it, I guess.
Yeah.
But so going home and doing that with my dad was fun. It was like, oh yeah, this is, I can still do it. And it in an ego way, it did matter to me that people were like, yo, for a guy in LA, you can rope all right. It's like, yeah, all right.
Still got it.
I felt good. I was mad at myself that I cared about
that. Oh man. Well, I hope you get your own ranch someday.
Thanks, man.
It was good talking to you.
Nice talking with you as well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. That's our show. That was interesting, right? A cowboy tale. Who would have fucking thunk it? a cowboy tale. I'm coming to you from a car in a panic, driving to Indianapolis to get a plane to another plane that I'm probably going to miss. Go to WTF Pod for all your WTF Pod needs. Enjoy your life. Hopefully everything works out. And I don't want to be misunderstood. I have nothing against horses. They're just not for me. What else? I don't know what else, man. I can't live like this. I got to pay more attention to my travel. Can you hear the air conditioner? Look, they can't all be perfect. You know, I'm just happy I had the equipment. I could have done this in my hotel room, but I didn't because I thought it would make my flight until I saw the schedule. And now I don't know what's going to happen. I'm probably going to be running with a bag through Chicago, sweating. Not even having time to go to Rick Bayless' restaurant to have a Cuban sandwich. I don't have the Ambassador Club access anymore because somehow or another there was a falling out between Amex and American Airlines, so I'm not even special in that way anymore. These are luxury problems, as they say. Ugh, God damn it. Boomer lives!
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.